she comes back. What if there's no way of moving back? What when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it. We go into the field to investigate. Portions of tonight's show were pre-recorded. Hopefully, I'm watching Los Straitjackets at the Gray Eagle right now. Yeah, there may still be time. Look for the tallest man in the room.
That's unless Vance, I'm there.
That's Vance Pollock. Hey, I got you beat, Sam.
No,
not
you
by
don't.
Much. Yes,
no, you
yes,
don't.
I do.
Shelly, we'll have to.
We're going to have to stand back to back. Yeah, no contest, Sam.
Whatever.
I'm the shortest, so there's no contest.
I was 6'8", man. I was 6'8" in my prime.
In your prime, and you have me beat.
I can still stand up straight.
All right.
If it's a contest. Sam the Animal Steel is already fighting, berating me, breaking up the flow here. How you doing, Sam?
Oh, pretty okay. Just 6'6" over here, just a shorty.
Right. And Miss Shelley Wright, Investigator Shelley Wright, fresh off a haunted Biltmore Village tour and ready to do another one tomorrow night, Sunday night.
Yes, so excited. Oh my goodness, my very first tour for this Biltmore Village Mystery Tour was amazing. We had 4 guests that experienced paranormal phenomena, and it was incredible. And I told them at the very beginning, okay, you know, I am a ghost magnet, so it is very possible that if you are going to see anything ever in your life, you're going to see it tonight with me. And they did.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We might get a chance to hear some details. Were the experiences in the context of some of the stories that you were telling?
They were at a couple of the locations that I stopped at. It wasn't necessarily, oh my gosh, over here something happened. It was at 2 of our stops. One of them was one that I wouldn't have expected necessarily. But, you know, I think that we stood back in such a place where you could see more of the building and what was going on. And I think that was why one of our guests was able to see what she could. And then there was another place where we have 2 experiences going on there. I barely started talking when all of a sudden they're like, okay, such and such over here, my son, he just saw this, and so did I. And then somebody walked up and said the same thing. So I got all of our guests to get their cameras out and start shooting the rooftop right then.
I'm intrigued. And what was this that they saw? Tell us more.
It was a dark figure on top of the roof, and they all described it as blacker than black.
How black is it?
3 of them. It was so black. But the fourth one did not see the figure on the roof. The fourth one saw something from inside the building, just waving at them. Now, the Southern Highland Craft Guild is in that location right now, but they were closed. There was nobody in there except for, you know.
No, and roof access to that building is not normal. It's not like there's a patio or anything up there like on some places. The rooftop of that old Biltmore Oteen Bank building in Biltmore Village, I've never been up on the roof, and I went in there and kicked around you know, under different titles. I used different titles, but also when the building was under different occupancy. The first time I was in there was about 1993 or 4, when it was a real estate office.
Okay.
And that place was a mess. And then the next time I was in there, it was Oscar's. That was the restaurant, a little Cuban restaurant before the Melting Pot.
Okay.
And then you got to spend a lot of time in there when it was a Melting Pot. Did you ever go up on the roof?
No, I never went up on the roof.
No.
I've never had occasion to. I didn't even think about it.
No. So it's strange that they would see a dark figure up there. We'll call, blacker than black. We'll call it Nevermore Black.
We'll call it that. And three of them had physical problems afterward. They all felt yucky.
Queasy? Would you say?
Kind of nausea. Not feeling good after. Now, another one said she felt like whatever was up there looked her right in the face, and it was not pleasant. She was sick the rest of the night.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
We might be talking about our Nazi necromancer William Dudley Pelley again. I broached the subject last week and
broached.
Yeah.
I would say you dove in.
Yeah, I did rather dive into it. He's a local ne'er-do-well from the 1930s who got himself into some trouble with the federal government and spent a little matter of 7.5 years in the federal pen. I've got some things along that line, but I thought I would bear on a wider sort of personal level. I'm going to take you down some personal rabbit holes, and or maybe we should call them ant hills, because it seems like the trails branch and spread out to infinity. Have you ever seen the cutaway of like an ant bed, Sam Steele?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty impressive, right?
Mm-hmm. And remember ant farms.
Only in the last few years I've seen where people have made like a cast of an ant hill with lead or wax or something like that. Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Kill a lot of ants to do that, though.
Yeah, yeah. There were like little ants stuck in the
what
in
about
the, cast.
The ants' feelings? They're out there working hard.
Yeah, but anyway, I think maybe ant hill is a better expression than rabbit hole for some of my dabblings. I'll tell you how the public library, I think, kind of energizes my discoveries. And a recent example, I mean, it's ongoing. I can document these strange displays of psychic synchronicity from 1992 right up till last week, 2017, and all points in between in the environs of this strange town known as Asheville, North Carolina. For those around the globe, you got to make it here one day. You got to set foot on the ground. For all you locals listening out there on 570, you're lucky. You're lucky to be here. We may light a candle and try to contact a spirit
just
tonight.
Because we have candles in here doesn't mean we have to try to get spirits in here.
Just because it's a seance candle. Yeah, Sam, you won't be invoking any demons.
I'll go down the hall.
did you read the little incantation on the front?
Shelly gave me a candle. It's the ghost seance candle. Is that correct?
That's it.
Okay.
How's it smell?
It smells good.
It's a pretty blue color.
I do like that blue.
I don't know how to describe the smell, but it says, be you spirit, ghost, haunt, or shade, with my words you will be swayed. Make known to me what you will tell. Respond to me, and all will be well. Clear and true, pass your messages to me. Free and easy, our communication will be.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you feel a little cosmic crackle with that? I did.
The cosmic crackle.
That was just my sultry baritone.
It's going to be good in any case, and I think what greater mystery, we'll revisit this, Claude Calloway, the lost uncle of Joshua P. Warren. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. You'll always want to drop by joshuapwarren.com. Is there a period after the P?
No.
And check out his Joshua P. Warren Daily podcast. Have you caught any of those guys?
Yes.
The answer is yes, yes.
I've been working a lot.
I listened to a Joshua P. Warren Daily podcast from last weekend, or maybe it was last Friday, the 13th. He did a nice, about a 10-minute conversation about the number 13, the legends, the mythology, the idea that bad luck is associated with the number 13. Where does that come from? Anyway, every day, enlightenment from the man, Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren Daily Podcast, which you can access from his website, joshuapwarren.com, no period after the P. And, of course, speaking of strange.com, where you can listen to past podcasts of this very show, it's the place to pick up links and share around on social media with your friends if you heard something that you just got to share. And isn't all of it worth sharing? okay, 1992. Polk County, Florida. That's the armpit of Florida. Largest county in Florida, I believe. Largest county in Central Florida, anyway. It's in what they call the I-4 corridor, or Lampa, between Orlando and Tampa. It's where I grew up, in the swamp. Anyway, I'm driving to college, to it's now a state college. In those days, it was just the local community college, Polk Community College. Go Vikings! They even changed the mascot. It's not even the Vikings anymore. It's like the Eagles, the Polk State Eagles. Anyway, enough of that. Driving to Polk Community College, and I got a very strange vibe at a certain point. Driving down that road. This is just my morning commute. You know how it is when you drive up and down the same stretch of road 1,000 times. You're not thinking anything of it. And it's a pretty barren stretch. Cow pastures and palmettos on either side of the highway there. U.S. Highway 98 running south of Lakeland there. And I got this strange sensation, this overwhelming sensation, and I wasn't necessarily hungover or anything like that, so I was like, I'm just fine, clear as a bell, and I'm driving down the road, and I get this overwhelming sensation, go to the library and look. Nothing more specific than that, but the urge was so unique, so overwhelming, I'd not experienced anything just like this before. That what did I do the next day? What? I went to the library.
To the library.
Checked out Beverly Cleary, Ramona and Beezus.
I loved Ramona Cleary.
I had no context. But I'll tell you what fell off the shelf into my hands when we get back from the break. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. I'm Vance Pollock in the studio with Sam and Shelley. Shall Vance and Sam reign on a Saturday night here in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll be right back.
Of inhabitants.
Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. I'm in the studio with Sam and Shelley. Sam is on the verge of hoofing it because we're gonna light this candle. Sam, I'm not going to summon any demons, but I thought if since I'm talking about spirit communication, it would be appropriate to strike up this candle. I got it all
light
unwrapped over here.
Shelley says I did the incantation.
You did.
That's fine.
I felt
I'm
it.
Just like
I'm using your Jesus cigarette lighter, if that makes a difference. Okay,
that's how we roll here.
Well, Jesus rose from the dead. That's fine.
Hope it doesn't set any sprinklers off. We now have a seance candle burning on the table as we speak. That just happened. Okay, I'm going to continue my tale of urges from the unknown, we'll say. Urges from beyond. So I'm traveling this lonely highway between Lakeland and Bartow, Florida, in about 1992, and I have this urge to go to the library, or I hear this urge, almost like a voicing, go to the library, look. It was distinct enough that I wrote the date down, made a note of it, not only in like my regular notebook. I was taking a lot of notes and writing a lot of nonsense in those days, sort of stream of consciousness stuff, open to the universe, right? But I was over at a friend's house very shortly after that and told them, relayed the story to them and said, this sensation was very profound. I said, so profound, in fact, that I need to remember this date. Now I don't remember the date, but I know that it's written down. I took a carpenter pencil and wrote on one of the rafters. I'm a tall guy. I could reach up in the open ceiling in this room that my friend was staying, and I wrote the date on the inside of one of those rafters and my initials next to it. And I said, there it is, as long as this building stands. Strangely, that building does not exist anymore, but somewhere in my notes there's evidence. I wrote this down before these quite astounding results. The next day I went to the library at Florida Southern College, the largest single collection of Frank Lloyd Wright architecture and my alma mater, though I had not enrolled there at this time. Maybe this experience encouraged me to enroll, because that's where I later got my bachelor's in communications. That's why I'm so good. I'm trained. I went into the library. I sauntered up the stairs to the second floor, and I just started browsing. I tell you, I did not really know my way around the library. I didn't know the Dewey Decimal System from the Dudley Do-Right. And I was basically pulling books off the shelf. Oh, this is interesting. Oh, these subjects sound engaging. Strolling the aisles, and it's a pretty big library. It's a big three-story library, and I'm on that middle floor just strolling the aisles. I could almost walk to the very section of the library I was standing in. Here I am 25 years later. I could almost walk to the very place, maybe even pull down the same book. I don't remember the title of it, but I remember I pulled the book down, started thumbing through it. Psychometry, just waiting to read the right passage. And the first thing I remember is Asheville's goat-bearded mystic, William Dudley Pelley. And I was like,
whoa.
Bam, never heard of this guy before. This is God's honest truth. Asheville's goat-bearded mystic, William Dudley Pelley. Okay, the goat beard. You had me at goat-bearded. You had me at Asheville, actually. Throw in mystic, and then who is this William Dudley Pelley character? We talked about him a little bit last week. He ended up, as my friend Jim McKenzie, who's been on the show before, observed, off the rails in about 1933. He got into some nasty, nazzy politics, and... But he came to Asheville in 1932 as a well-respected writer of fiction. He had written novels, best-selling novels. In those days, if you had a novel that sold 30,000 copies, that was pretty incredible. If you were writing for magazines like the Saturday Evening Post and Cosmopolitan and Red Book that had circulations in the millions, you were a household name. And he was. And the ladies liked him because, as we know, the ladies like to read their romances, their melodrama. Are you a romance reader, Shelley?
Kind of. I used to be, back when I had time to read something.
You like a good romantic or dramatic story about the human condition.
Prince Valiant.
but I like to throw in some mystery, too. I don't like it just to be a straight romance.
Exactly. And Pelly was good at that. He had that sort of a mysterious twist in a lot of his tales. But they were pretty homespun, just small town sort of fiction for the most part. Nothing necessarily profound. Sometimes there were morals and fables, but so I become aware of this guy and his connection to Asheville right off the bat. I soon discover that he was rather notorious, did some time in the pokey, and then I'd commit to finding out more the next time I'm in Asheville. I was like, okay, this is it. This is what I was looking for. I have no doubt because I go to Asheville every summer. See, I'm a transplant, but my mother is from Yancey County. So I do have roots. I have ancestors buried, you know, over in Yancey County, right, you know, in the shadow of Mount Mitchell. There's one of the old family cabins standing from the early 1800s. One of the oldest buildings in western North Carolina is my great-great-great-great-grandfather George Silver's cabin out there at Kona, North Carolina. But anyway, I said to myself, self, next time you go to Asheville, you got to find some local dirt on this dude, William Dudley Pelly, because I already understood then that 60 years of history on somebody who had made a lot of nasty mistakes and powerful enemies, history wasn't going to be very kind to William Dudley Pelly. But the fact that his name even ended up in this footnote that I was reading made me curious enough that when I next came to Asheville, I strolled into Pack Library, I walked up to the counter, and I asked the reference librarian, "You got anything on William Dudley Pelly?" The woman raised her arm and pointed over my shoulder behind me and said, "Do you see the old man standing over there that looks like Colonel Sanders?" And I turned and, "Why, yes, I do see the old man standing over there that looks like Colonel Sanders. He used to work for William Dudley Pelly, and he talks about him all the time."
Wow.
I couldn't have been in a better spot at a better time. The first time I ever asked anybody in Asheville about William Dudley Pelly, the man was standing in the same room. The guy that was wearing the goat beard inspired by his mentor, William Dudley Pelly. So I went over and I introduced myself to this little fella and said, "Someone tells me you know about William Dudley Pelly. You should have seen the sparkle in that old guy's eye. He's 85 years old." And he says, "Oh, my, William Dudley Pelly, he's one of my heroes.
I just can't wait to talk about nationalistic socialism, racism." God.
Well, he didn't want to necessarily talk politics, but he did want to talk about summoning the dead and remote viewing and astral projection and all that sort of good stuff. And what's more, he lived in the Vanderbilt Apartments right next door, and he said, "Let me show you my collection." So within 5 minutes, we're strolling down Haywood Street on our way up to his apartment, where it's just lined with rusty old filing cabinets full of the weirdest stuff you have ever seen, that I've ever seen. And we'll delve into some of those rusty old filing cabinets when we get back after the break. Speaking of strange.
dream.
Speaking of strange, I'm your host, Vance Pollock. I'm in the captain's chair for Joshua P. Ward. Well, yeah, you knew that. That's been going on for months now, off and on, when we can coordinate. We always enjoy bringing you a fresh show, and tonight's show is scented by seance candle. Can you smell that? It's kind of... It's pungent. I like it. It's light, but it's, I don't know. It's not blueberry. The candle's very blue, but it's a little bit musky. I don't know.
Well, it's herbs and oils that are conducive for bringing forth spirits.
It smells like a seance room. It really does. What I imagine a seance room would smell like.
Yeah.
So, kudos to Coventry Candles. These are available at Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. The proprietress, one Miss Shelley Wright. Get by there and see her. She's got all kinds of goodies down there. You got to get to Nevermore. If you've been to Nevermore, but it's been a little while, you got to get back to Nevermore because new inventory all the time, right, Shel?
Yeah, exactly.
So 1992, I'm walking up the street from Pack Library to the Vanderbilt Apartments with a little old white haired man with a white goatee who is leading me to a room that is like a vault of horrors. it's packed with these filing cabinets just bulging with papers. He opens a drawer and I see 1950s issues of Fate magazine. No joke. That's one of the first things I noticed was these old Fate magazine covers in one of the drawers. He pulls open another drawer and I recognize something that I had seen in my research. Liberation magazine, Asheville, North Carolina. I knew this was William Dudley Pelley's publication. He pulls out a stack that are dog-eared all around. Sometimes the covers and the pages loose because he had read them so many times. Notes in the margins, and he says, this is all that's left of my Liberation magazines. He pulls another drawer and pulls out a stack of papers with pink covers. He says, these are my pink scripts. What in the heck? He said, yeah, these are the lessons from Galahad College on Charlotte Street in 1932. Bam, 60 years later, and 10 minutes from the time I inquired at the desk at Pack Library, he's showing me this stuff. He says, I heard about William Dudley Pelley in 1929 after they published his 7 Minutes in Eternity, the story about his first out-of-body experience. It was published in the American magazine in 1929. He said, my grandmother brought that magazine to me and says, Guy, you might want to read this. I think you'll be interested. He said, I read that article, and it was electric. Those were his words. And I was fascinated by this man. And so when I read in the papers that he was moving to Asheville, or an old friend of his at the time, here it is. He's like paying it forward. It's passing the torch. I'm talking to this 85-year-old man, and he's telling me when he was my age, early 20s at that time, that an old man here in town said, you got to go check this guy out. he's just moved to town, and he already recognized the name because his grandmother had shown him the 7 minutes in Eternity magazine. So he hopped on the trolley. Yes, there were streetcars in Asheville in those days, and he's riding the streetcar out toward Grove Park. And there's a pretty young lady on the streetcar next to him, and he strikes up a conversation and says, "I'm going up to the Galahad College." And she says, "Oh, yeah, well, I work at Galahad College. I'll be glad to show you around." And they chat a little bit about communicating with the dead and good things like that on the ride out to Sunset Parkway, where the old women's clubhouse was being used by Pelley's Galahad College. He said they walk into the foyer of the Galahad College, and there are just tables along the walls just stacked with magazines and brochures and pamphlets and things like this. And he says this lovely young lady who has ridden out on the trolley with him and escorted him up to the college building reaches over on the table and picks up this little gray magazine. And as he tells me this, he plops this little gray magazine into my hands and says, "You can have that now." And I look at the cover, and it reads, "Making Contact with the Dead, Asheville, North Carolina, 1932. This is 1992, 25 years ago, 60 years later. Are you caught up in this swirling miasma of psychic residue yet? I'm overwhelmed. Long story short, a story that's already long, just a little bit shorter than it could be. I continue to research off and on this strange character, William Dudley Pelley, and his colleagues locally here from that era for the next 25 years, even to this day. And it's not long before I answer one of the first questions I hear from people, and that is, why Asheville? Why did this weirdo choose Asheville? Well, simple. One of the people who was a devout follower of his new religious instruction was a woman by the name of Lillian Emerson Terry. She's buried out at Riverside Cemetery in one of the finest crypts out there. She was the widow of GE, that's General Electric pioneer, Franklin S. Terry. Their estate was in the Oaks over in Black Mountain. Montreat College owns it now. But at In the Oaks, she had something like a 300-acre estate, and she was a wealthy widow woman, and she was into Pelley's game, and she said, "Mr. Pelley, if you would like to come to the mountains of North Carolina, I can set you up with property to build your college for metaphysics to teach and train these things." Lillian Terry had already published a little book of channeled messages in Black Mountain, North Carolina in 1928 called The Beloved Order of the Sword and the Cup. I own a copy of it. Very rare, little amazing book. That's another one of those little electric things when you hold Beloved Order in your hand and you think this was published in Black Mountain in 1928. It's just bizarre. Yeah, so she invites Pelley to town, and then when she becomes more intimate with Pelley, at least more intimate with his politics, she realizes that he is going down a dark path, a left-hand path, and maybe it's not all light and goodness like it seems on the outside. And she divorces herself from Pelley's affairs, but he has already come here and set up shop, so to speak. So he rents the Asheville Women's Clubhouse out in Grove Park. Miss Terry ditched on him, so he's here. He has some other acquaintances. He has a publishing or printing contract with a local print shop, and he's already moved his magazine headquarters here. So Liberation starts coming out of Asheville in 1932 with articles about why not keep in touch with your departed loved ones and, you know, good stuff like that. But the veiled indictments of Jews, communists, but particularly Jews, are they're bubbling under. already. And they come to a head in January of 1933. And the rest is pretty ugly and stuff that most people would just as soon steer clear of. But from his first arrival in Asheville, 1932, before it became quite so dark, William Dudley Pelley produced some pretty amazing literature, and I think we can share some of the inspirations. I have a book here, a hardbound book called History of the Origin of All Things. History of the Origin of All Things. I want to read a passage right from up front from the 1936 edition. What man calls the devil is the desire of the soul for the sake of its own growth to have these experiences of evil. For the soul recognizes the fact that it must have them. Man must know evil in order to be able to recognize it. And to be sure, he must know it so well that he will not be overcome by it again. Given in the shadow of his holy retreat upon earth near Asheville, North Carolina, July 25th, 1936, by himself, Jesus Christ.
Jesus lived here?
Jesus was here, or he was speaking to people who were writing books here in 1936.
Wow. He lives in all of us.
The timeline is just a little skewed.
Yeah. This book, The History of the Origins of All Things, Anna MacDonald was responsible for the 1936 edition. She was one of Pelley's acolytes. It just gets weirder and weirder. I'll try and bring it up to 2017 after the break. We got a special interview next hour. We'll be right back after these messages. Speaking of strange, Saturday night is the right time to be listening to 570 WWNC, Talk of the Mountains, or streaming around the globe from speakingofstrange.com. That's right. It is the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and I'm taking you down that anthill and out a million corridors in a whirlwind tour of my encounters with madness and how it all rather congealed and how I became the maniac that I am today. Yeah, how nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, it does sometimes still send a chill down my spine, some of these extreme synchronicities, but nothing surprises me. Even when people come to me with completely outrageous stories, I'm like, sounds rational. A giant police dog spoke to you. Okay. That, I can see that. Oh, goodness. But back to Asheville, North Carolina. We'll say mid-90s now, not quite 25 years ago, because I already knew about Mrs. Lillian Terry the spiritualist dabbler from Black Mountain, North Carolina. I was curious about her involvement in the occult, shall I say. She's the woman who invited William Dudley Pelley here. She's the reason he came here. Then she kind of reneged on him when she realized that he was headed for some dark stuff. You can read that on his Wikipedia page. I don't have to go into that. But Nazi necromancer is, pretty good. I coined that term last week on the show, by the way.
I like that.
The Nazi necromancer, because it throws the nasty politics out there, and it throws the communication with the dead out there. And those are the two most fascinating elements about the guy.
I want to use that for my tour.
The Nazi necromancer, William Dudley Pelley. Anyway, Lillian Terry had died back in the 50s. I'm back in Pack Library in the North Carolina collection and browsing the shelves again a couple years later, and here's a book on Black Mountain, North Carolina. I'm thinking, Black Mountain, is there anything I'm curious about in Black Mountain? Oh, yeah, that's where Mrs. Terry lived. I wonder if there's anything about the Terry estate in there. I pull down this little volume about Black Mountain, and I flip through. Oh, here's a whole chapter on the Terrys, Franklin S. Terry and Lillian Emerson Terry. And I flip back to the paragraph death. Lillian Terry, 1950 some odd, was traveling from her home in Florida back to Black Mountain when she was struck and killed in a head-on collision on Highway 98 South between Bartow and Lakeland. The very spot I had the hunch that led me to William Dudley Pelley.
Bum, bum, bum.
And the woman who invited him to Asheville in the first place had died in a car accident in that spot. You can't make that up.
That's crazy. I mean,
it became very apparent to me, or at least the imagination doesn't have to run too wild, to make the connection there. And I think there is some sort of connection. This past week, I had that hunch again to look at the library. I was really, really looking for a new subject for biographical research, and I wasn't coming up with anything. So I'm in the library out at Fairview, where I'm working now. Come see me. And I'm looking at the new bookshelf, the new fiction, and here's a collection of end-of-the-world stories, my cup of tea. So I pick this end-of-the-world collection up, and I'm like, I want to see who's writing in here. And I flip it open, and I'm scanning the list of titles, and I see a fella by the name of Frank Lilly Pollock. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. One of my kinsmen writing an end-of-the-world type story. Let me get the lowdown on this guy. And I flip over to the editor's bio on Frank Lilly Pollock, and it reads, Frank Lilly Pollock wrote this end-of-the-world story in 1906 for Argosy magazine. Finis, we'll call it. I don't Finis maybe in French, but it's F-I-N-I-S. By Frank Lilly Pollock, and it's all over the internet. I had no idea he had written this. So I wanted to do a little biography on Frank Lilly Pollock. I found a newspaper article that says Frank Lilly Pollock, North Carolina writer. I'm like, huh? I dig a little deeper, look in the newspaper archives, and I find in the Asheville Citizen-Times, 1904, local author Frank Lilly Pollock, writing for the Black Cat magazine this month, publishes The Death Pearl, a fine story and well written. Frank Lilly Pollock, pulp horror author, living here in Asheville, North Carolina. They keep coming. The hits just keep coming. Next hour, an interview with Stu Phillips. Joshua P. Warren spoke to the man who wrote the soundtrack for Knight Rider, Battlestar Galactica, Battlestar Galactica, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, right?
Lobo, BJ and the Bear.
And many, many more. The Stu Phillips interview is going to keep you entertained and feeling a bit nostalgic next hour on Speaking of Strange.